Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC, 9:15 on a Monday morning. Ray Graff with you, and the panel is now in session. Political consultant and lobbyist Libby Post is here, Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI, also director of the RPI-IBM Artificial Intelligence Research Collaboration. Jim Hendler is here.
Yay!
Investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo is here, as well as WAMC's Alan Shartok. You can join us this morning just by sending us a quick email, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Keep your letters short, to the point, and on topic. No abbreviations, no links, no attachments, proofread, please. One a customer per day, panel@wamc.org. Good morning, all. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Morning.
All right. Shall I bang here. A gavel to start the show here?
Nah. It's wonderful to be here.
There you go.
Okay.
Certainly a thrill. Alan, how are you doing?
I'm just ducky.
Okay, good.
I'm fine. I came in here from some protracted labor negotiation.
With the union rep?
And the colorful language.
Right. Most of the colorful language was your own.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. We welcome you all here today to the roundtable. And once again, the email address is panel@wamc.org. Horrific news out of Rockland County over the weekend. The suspect in the Hanukkah stabbings in Muncie, New York, has been arraigned on charges. He attacked five people. He pleaded not guilty yesterday. Bail was set at $5 million. He's accused of stabbing and wounding five people as they gathered at a rabbi's home to celebrate Hanukkah on Saturday. Police identified the suspect as Grafton E. Thomas of Greenwood Lake, New York. The governor said yesterday that the attack was fueled by intolerance and evidence of a cancer in American politics. He's calling it an act of domestic terrorism. The stabbings come on the heels of a string of attacks targeting Jews in the region. Alan.
Well, you know, I'm going to give over to two of the other panel members who have great attachments to all of this. But I have to say that the original defense was a mental health defense. He's mentally ill and therefore, you know, not guilty. Five people are dead. Five people were attacked.
Injured.
And, I do think that for the protection of people, that it's correct to make sure that somebody with this kind of history and this kind of ability to bring this much pain to people should be, if not incarcerated, should be placed for his protection and the protection of the people in a secure facility.
Yipes.
You don't think so?
I think it's way more complicated than that. That's the problem, is that we're trying to make easy fixes to this. And the mass violence in our country has to do with a whole mix of problems. Mental illness is a big part of it. We don't treat it. We don't recognize it. And then we have laws that make getting weaponry very easy. If you read the stories on this, nobody associated with this guy had any inkling of anything like this. There was no prior violence of any sort, no ideation, nothing that would indicate he would just
go
like this.
Yeah, but he's
and
been
I,
in trouble I, with the law before.
He had been.
He had a number of situations, and
like
he was
what?
Only put into jail once. I'll go back and read it and tell you.
Well, he was arrested for reckless endangerment,
yeah.
But I don't think he was put in jail.
No, but he was arrested once, but
okay.
There were a number of things. But let's look at the real root of this. Okay. The amount of anti-Semitic, transphobic, homophobic, racist violence has escalated in this country since Donald Trump ran and won the presidency.
By the way, I said that on my 740 commentary this morning because I agree with that. I think he's let the cage open.
Right. This is what happens when the head of state spews hate. It's just that simple. His rhetoric gives license for people to act. And honestly, I wrote this on Facebook. I have never been more on guard as a Jewish lesbian in my life. You know, it is scary. It is incredibly scary. My father fought in World War II. We lost, just like the other two Jews in the room, lost people in the camps, lost people in, sure. you know, from Hitler, the Nazi Germany. And it's just unfathomable that this is what we're living through right now in the year, soon to be the year 2020. And we are reliving Germany, Nazi Germany, from 1939 until 1945. And, you know, some people will say, oh, you're being, you know, hysterical about this. But this is the reality. We are now targets. This isn't just one incident. There were 9 anti-Semitic attacks in New York over the 8 days of Hanukkah. All those other people weren't seen as mentally ill, necessarily. Nobody raised those issues. The fact of the matter is,
but in this case,
we're targets.
In this case,
I don't care.
It was.
I don't care. I don't care.
I know you
don't
care.
I don't care.
Let her speak.
You use the word simple, and that's not true at all. Definitely, anti-Semitism is part of it, along with ease of getting weapons and our inability to take care of the mentally ill in this country. But look at the response. Cuomo said this is domestic violence.
Yeah, it is. It's domestic terrorism.
Terrorism, right. And he went. He did lump all of the other incidences and the increase, and so has de Blasio. And the reforms and the fixes that they're calling for are sweeping, including education in schools about the Holocaust mm-hmm. and what happened in World mm-hmm. War II, out of fear that the Holocaust, the survivor generation, is lost, and so young people don't know it.
And half the people in this country don't think it happened.
Exactly, yes. We've seen that. And they also think Donald Trump is better than Lincoln. I mean, we could talk about stupid electorate for a long time. And that doesn't help. And contrast this with the shooting in the church in Texas, where a gunman came in and he was in a disguise that people were looking around saying, hey, look at him. They knew right away. He pulls out a gun and begins shooting people. He actually killed because he had a gun rather than a knife. And two of the members of a security force pull out guns and kill him. Two people end up dead. And that's the way we're fixing the problem. We're arming everybody.
Right. Wait.
Happened today.
Wait. You're quite right. There are long-term solutions and there are shorter-term solutions. But I hope you're not suggesting that it wasn't correct to kill the guy.
I think that the solution to try to solve a problem of people
and save 240 people, by the way.
Sorry, no, I do not think it is right that we're arming teachers and members of the church as a way to protect people going to mass or to school. No, I think it's horrible and an escalation
and the
of the problem.
Rosemary, I'm sorry, and I don't mean to give you a hard time here, but the alternative to having shot that man was what?
Is to stop talking about short-term solutions. There are none, and to start working on the long-term solutions.
So you're
saying, don't see places in Europe or Africa or Asia where you arm people in order to protect themselves.
Well, I'm not arguing for that. I am just simply saying, in this case, a person who was mentally disturbed, obviously or not, gets shot before he can shoot 240 people. Are you telling me that that's incorrect?
Yes.
Well, I don't agree with you.
Well, this law went into effect in Texas in September, and it basically allowed licensed and this security team, as I have read it in the Times and the Post and elsewhere, not just a bunch of dudes with guns. These are ones who were trained, and they
Correct.
Were set to be a security team in the wake of the shooting that happened a couple of years ago, where 26 churchgoers were shot in Texas. And so this law took effect, and it would seem that they probably saved a lot of lives.
Oh, my God. And that's exactly what I'm afraid of, that, oh, look, see, people, good people with guns will stop the bad guys.
And the alternative?
And the alternative is responsible treatment and funding of mental illness.
That's all
and
true. That's
gun
long-term.
Control.
But what about what long-term. Happened in that church yesterday?
All right, so what happened in that church yesterday is that a guy was stopped. We had another example. They all run in together, but where the police were there within 30 seconds and they shot all the bad guys, Dayton, I think. And so this seems to be a justification for the idea that you arm everybody and then we'll be safe.
I
think that you didn't say it, but others are, Alan. They're saying, see, oh, this guy saved their lives. Let's
right.
arm more people. Think about how horrible it is that a church has to train a force an armed force in order to keep parishioners safe. That's insane.
I gotta say, if it were my mother or father or your mother or father, I think you who got saved among those 240 people, I think you might be saying something different.
This is why we don't put the relatives of survivors on juries. You cannot judge fairly and with policy in mind if your own person, if your own loved one has been injured. Of course not. But for a policy for our government, I read that and said, oh, wow, they're going to call this a success for arming everybody.
Okay, I got to say.
You watch it.
I got to say that my wife, Roselle, and it was on the front page of the New York Times when she did it with her colleague Jack Spencer and her department at Monument Mountain Regional High School, created the first Holocaust unit that every kid had to take in the school. It was very important. They did it, and they got a pushback. They got pushback from some German Americans who said this was anti-German. Mm-hmm. They got pushback from people who thought that it was just uncalled for. But here you are. You're saying we ought to do more of it, and we should. That unit was copied over and over and over again in some of the larger school districts in Massachusetts and other places. That's where it started. I've always been very proud of that. And so when you mentioned the need to do that, I think you made a good point.
Yeah. I mean, it's like we talk in this panel all the time about civics, that when we stop seeing civics, we see mm-hmm. a lack of engagement, or definitely a lack of informed engagement, and we need to go back to it. It's the same with our history. We are not teaching the history of anti-Semitism and World War II. I disagree that a short-term solution is what we do while those long-term fixes go into place.
And
no,
you would have done again.
It shortcuts it.
You would have done what yesterday when that guy came in there?
Called the police.
He had a gun. He had it was an automatic weapon, whatever it was. He had a gun. He was shooting people.
Well,
that person should have been shot. Sorry.
Yeah, I understand where both of you are coming from. Quite honestly, at Jim's in my synagogue at Ohav Shalom, we have at the high holidays. We have armed guards. You know,
yeah.
We have police.
I think synagogues are different than churches. Yes, I think that's true. You are targeted. There's no question.
Well, but these churches were targeted too. I mean, this was the
second church.
This was the second church in Texas. You know, last year, local lost family in that church, and she was actually shot. So, you know, I get where you're coming from, Rosemary. I think we need to take guns out of people's hands. I think the idea of arming folks in churches is a little weird. This one particular time, it worked. The good guys supposedly got the bad guy. But that doesn't mean it will always work that way. But we have to do this. I think right now we've upgraded the security system. When Jim and I do the floor management on a Shabbat, we have to have a panic button. You know, it's insane that this is what we've come to. You know, but the fact of the matter is that, yes, it's education, it's gun control. You don't see this in Europe because people aren't allowed to have guns in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that simple. You know, I was in Paris for the attacks. It was a scary thing. These guys got guns. And they were able to do what they did, but it's much more rare of an occurrence because people are not allowed to have guns in Europe the way they are here. There is no Second Amendment in Europe. There is no right to bear arms, and the NRA has just totally, I can't use the word, just totally undermined what the Second Amendment is really about. But this goes back to the fact that these attacks. Over the 8 days of Hanukkah, is showing how much of a target the Jewish community is in this country. And it's never been like this. Look, when I grew up, I was called a dirty Jew and a Christ killer on the bus in school. You know, it was 1960s, and those parents were, their parents listened to Father Coughlin in the 30s and the 40s. You know, it was understandable, but then we had education and things. People didn't do that anymore. Things calmed down. But this president has given absolute
okay, and so
this.
How much does this president have to do with what's happening now?
I think it's all. I think that there was this unseemly underbelly of hatred in this country, and this president opened the door and said it's okay. Period.
I agree with you.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. You know, this whole thing is really complicated. I've been staying quiet because, you know, I I look for logical
A little too
solutions.
Long. You have 30 seconds, but go
I
ahead.
I look for logical solutions to these things, and there's not. But I think encountering this and taking it on as a society, rather than this nonsense we have of letting the NRA and those with money literally call the shots, is another big problem here. I mean, right. We really are not, as a society, dealing with this at all. And so I think whether it's short-term, long-term, or better solutions, we just have to engage and come up with some.
Right. Now, we're putting two events together. And obviously, the Hanukkah attack was not a shooting. However, an interesting point, and maybe we can get to this after the news, NBC was reporting police are also looking into a separate stabbing of a rabbi in the same town a month ago.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the New York Times reporting that the suspect yesterday, who was arraigned yesterday, tried to get in the synagogue next door and didn't get in. Anyway, we have to take a break for news. It's Libby Post, Jim Hendler, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok. It's the Roundtable Panel. You can email us at panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Monday morning. It's 9:34. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Libby Post, Jim Hendler, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok here on the Roundtable panel. And you, of course, can join us by emailing us at panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Oh, and we have some email.
We do, and they're coming in at a fairly important rate. In the same way, by the way, I'm so sorry for doing this, but WMC needs to be supported, and a lot of people understanding that these are the last 2 days before you can get your money into an envelope and send it in and have it as tax deductible where that is allowed. But in the meantime, we're getting a lot of mail, and as we always do on this program. I was at a party the other night, and everybody was coming up to me and talking about this program.
Really?
And saying how they loved it. And say, what's Rosemary really like?
Not assertive
We're
enough.
We're not sure.
That's so funny.
Isn't
so
that, yeah.
One of your friends was listening in New
York
City.
In New York using the WAMC internet, the app, and said, I was listening to you and you're good, but you need to be a little more assertive. I go, I can't wait to tell my co-panelist that.
That's funny.
Well, work on that for 2020, all right?
Okay. And Christine from Liberty. This is exactly an example of our Festivus airing of grievance email against you. Libby is blaming the recent attacks on Jews on Trump. I'll refresh your memory. I'm not a Trump supporter by any means. But a black man was guilty of this attack, for one. Two, Trump's son-in-law is Jewish. Some of you people need to get a grip, Christine from Liberty.
Stop it. It's not just Libby who thinks that way on this panel. And yes, as Trump points out himself, he has African-American supporters. And his he uses Jared all the time as a cover for his anti-Semitism. It's unquestionable what she has said, that this president has made white nationalism and anti-black and anti-women and anti-Jewish sentiment okay.
He's opened up the cage. Basically.
Yes, he has opened up the cage. And just because the perpetrator of this is black doesn't mean he's not impacted by the words of the president.
Exactly.
Well, and let, you know, again, and this was part of a pattern of violence. This wasn't a single event. This was a single event, but I mean, it was part of what we see as a growing violence. And again, many of those perpetrators come from different parts of the world, different things that, you know, we were lumping together the church shooting and the synagogue shooting. And I think we should, because it's violence against people for no good reason. That's what it really comes down to.
But what Trump has done here is to take the leash off and basically say, create a war against, quote, others.
That's exactly it. And everyone has their own definition of what other is.
That's right. And I will, I'll say, I think Trump gets tremendous blame for building this up, for letting this build. I don't think it's his fault in the sense that I think things were happening already. But you saw during the Obama days, every time there was a major shooting, every time there's something like that, Obama would be there. He would be saying, this is terrible, we must do things. He kept trying, right? Trump, it's sort of, you don't even hear from him on
the
most
odiousness
of
one, Trump
one
is that he took advantage of. He took advantage of big problems in this country with bigotry and history, and he exploited them to his own advantage. And that's what's worse.
And
he's done nothing as president to unify.
And if you're a mentally unbalanced person who hears the president of the United States saying it's okay, what do you think is going to happen?
Right.
Okay, so we already heard from Christine, and we've handled that. Randall says, thanks, Libby. Thank you, Libby. I want you to know how much I appreciate your presence on the panel and your spot-on discussion commentary. You're a constant, a consistent force for our minority communities, and that's Randall from Kingston.
Well, thank you, Randall.
And Catherine says, December 30th, why is Steve Miller still working in the White House? Why are Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump accepting this situation? Crazy people do know what is right and wrong. I worked on a psychiatric ward for 7 years. Crazy people should not be considered innocent for killing people. And that's from Catherine.
I don't think we consider them innocent, but we consider dealing with crime by mentally ill people different than people who don't have a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is no question, right? But on the other hand, you do have to protect the larger community from those people, you know, who are behaving in a way in which you can only expect is going to happen.
Or protect themselves. These shooters and stabbers are all ending up dead in these incidents.
But it's also important to understand.
Sorry,
go ahead, Jim.
It is important to understand the difference between doing something crazy, being mentally ill, having a mental problem. You know, we lump all these things together. I think, you know, blaming all this violence on the mentally ill is plain wrong.
Right. Absolutely.
We all agree on that.
We understand that. But it gets very blurry because you'd say somebody who broke into, you know, a synagogue, a church, and started shooting people must be crazy. And the answer is yes. That's not necessarily the legal definition. That by definition is not the legal definition. We could get into a lot. Let's not. But I think the key thing is all of this stuff has to be looked at. It's got to be taken as a whole. We have to start thinking as a society about the fact that, you know, you're having children killed in schools. You're having a re-rise of racial violence. You're having a re-rise of anti-Semitism. You have anti-church things. I mean, you know, we haven't even talked about what the motivations are for these things. We don't even know.
The rise in hate crimes against gay people and trans people is astounding.
All of this.
You know, there was an incident, I think, happened last week. Two guys were holding hands by a food truck, and a bunch of people just beat the crap out of them. Somewhere in the United States. I can find it. But it was local. It was not local, but it was.
Yeah.
But this is happening all the time. People walking down the street holding hands are getting harassed. Lesbians are getting beat up for just being lesbians. It's just insane.
We heard from Kurt, who says, stupid. I agree with Rosemary that U.S. electorate can be very stupid in assessing Donald Trump. However, since she seems to believe that the lawful use of force to save innocent people from being killed in a mass shooting is wrong, she lacks any high ground from which to make pronouncements as to what constitutes stupid. If she or a loved one was in a crowd that had been targeted by a mentally ill person with a gun or a firebomb or another weapon, I suspect her judgment as to what would constitute the proper use of force would change fairly quickly.
Well, this is what happens when we have discussions like this, and Alan and I are talking on opposite sides. You get that, of course, is not my real position, and that's why I said, of course, I would fight against if I were personally or my family was endangered, but then I should not also decide policy in the United States. I am not qualified to do it, and that's my point. I think that I am very worried about this, that this is going to be touted as a big success. We armed people in the church, and look, we stopped violence.
And then we heard from Neil, who said, anti-Semitic terrorism. The Republican Party in Rockland County, where the stabbing took place, published an ad showing an all-American white family with a caption accusing a Jewish county executive of, quote, trying to take over and end our way of life. It's pretty clear he's responsible for anti-Semitic violence in America. And that's from Neil.
They also did a video in that election cycle that was really pretty disgusting.
Well, if you want to join us today, the email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Keep the letters brief if you could. Everybody's doing a good job of that today.
That's right. Catherine says, guns. Libya's right that both Alan and Rosemary have a point. It is critical to not, in capital letters, use this tragedy as a reason to discourage the escalation of gun use. While I find it impossible to be okay with allowing more lives to be lost in preventing the means at hand to stop it. And then we heard from Kathy, armed protection in houses of worship. This is, in capitals, is a policy problem within the idea that people need to bring firearms to their houses of worship. On Elise Stefanik's Facebook page, her supporters, I'm so sorry, are saying that the people in Muncie would have been okay if they had guns. Sounds like an awful lot like victim blaming to me.
See what I mean?
Yes, that's
exactly what I'm worried about. Like, oh, yeah. See, just everybody carry guns and then we'll all be safe. Yeah, that's right. Worked. That worked in the
I'm also saddened by the thought, says Kathy, that only two, in quotes, people killed, as in Texas, is an acceptable outcome, rather than any kind of gun control. Sure, just think if you were one of the parents of one of those wonderful, beautiful little children in Connecticut who got murdered.
That's right.
P.S. I grew up streets away from the attack in Muncie. Horrible. And that's from Kathy. And Ryan says, arming choice members.
Church.
Oh, so you're so right.
Right.
Ray, you got there way before I could even that wasn't right.
It's fine.
Okay. Hello, table. I like it with the table.
Table.
Many armed citizens are more highly trained with our firearms than our overburdened police forces. Not taking anything away from police, of course. Responsible firearm owners can and do stop threats. It's a last resort, but it's necessary. Also, the neighborhood in Muncie is publishing photos of armed citizens openly carrying assault rifle weapons with magazines and accessories that are illegal under the New York State Safe Act, and that's from Ryan in Orange County.
God, it's sounding like Mad Max.
And then we heard from Linda, church in Texas. I am with Rosemary on this one. While I saw the video of what happened in that church in Texas over the weekend, all I could think of was, thou shalt not kill. It's horrible to watch a scene like that play out in the very house of thou shalt not kill. Well, Rosemary and I, being on the same side about the damage that guns can cause, still the question is, what if that guy had not been stopped from what he was doing? Terrible.
But you know, I do think one of these letters brought up, and it's starting to emerge as a theme that's worth looking at, is this whole politicization of religion, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that was part of what happened in Muncie, you know, and that spreads out. So, you know, again, you have what becomes a local thing. Religion gets blamed. That spreads. You start to get anti-religious.
I missed a word because of my fault of hearing.
Sorry.
This whole
politicization of religion. So in other words, using religion. So again, it would have been, you know, even a few years ago, an ad that was using religion in the way that those ads were would have been roundly condemned.
Absolutely.
Now it's like, it's just part of what we see in political advertising.
Well,
that's another
Muslims,
thing.
Islam has dealt with this for a
long time
in our country. It's the same
thing. Welcome to the new crusades.
Yeah, exactly.
Once again, says Don, yay Rosemary. Rosemary's gotten to the heart of the problem. In America, we always look for good guys, bad guys, explanation for our problems. As long as we do that, the cycle of violence will just go on. And that's from Don in Lenox.
All right. One more, and then let's take a quick break here.
Well, that's good, because that's all we got.
All right, sir.
Peter says, Muncie, New York violence. Helen, thank you for mentioning Jack Spencer and Roselle Chartok's masterful work on the Holocaust and anti-Semitism in this country. When I was teaching at Columbia, Cleveland, and Wilmington, that material was central in awakening awareness of the Nazis in the past and worldwide anti-Semitism today. I wish this material were required reading nationally in our schools. Happy New Year to you and the wonderful panel members. And that's Peter, who is a summer resident of Williamstown, Massachusetts, who I believe listens to the app.
It is the Roundtable Panel. Libby Post is here. Jim Hendler, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok. The email address is panel@wamc.org. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC, celebrating the music of Jerry Herman, who died last Thursday at age 88. That, of course, was MAME, right?
That was a good ride.
MAME, right.
Yeah, it was a great show.
88 years old. Good run. Definitely.
And he was wonderful.
There you go. You see? It's the Roundtable panel. Libby Post, Jim Hendler, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok are here. You are there. You can join us here by emailing us at panel@wamc.org. Democratic Congressman John Lewis says advanced pancreatic cancer is one more fight he'll take on and that he will continue to serve in the House as he undergoes treatment. The 79-year-old Georgia Democrat announced on Sunday that the cancer was detected earlier this month during a routine medical visit. Lewis rose to national attention in the civil rights era and has represented his Atlanta area district since his first election in 1986. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi relayed her best wishes to Lewis, saying, "We're all praying for you." Lewis says he has a fighting chance.
My son and I had a debate yesterday online about whether Trump had a deal with the devil or the Russians to out all the articulate, moral, righteous men. We had McCain
to get rid of them.
Elijah Cumming, and now John Lewis. It's a terrible, terrible. I'm saying loss because that's such a terrible diagnosis. Yeah, very bad news.
It's a tough fight for sure.
Mm-hmm. I met him a few years ago. The man is just was awesome, and. You know, I really, really hope for him and, you know.
Hope for us.
Yeah. Roselle and I went to hear him speak up at the college in North Adams where Roselle taught for all of those years. Wonderful man. We have a picture of Roselle and John Lewis and I. It's in a prominent place in my wall here in the radio station.
Well, I have a feeling that a lot of people are going to be praying for him. And there's something to be said for that. There's something to be said for all that good energy being put out into the universe, and hopefully he'll... Look, Alex Trebek is still with us after being diagnosed with the same thing, and he's undergoing treatment, and...
He actually came back and did some shows, did he not?
Yeah, and we know... Jim and I know folks from OHAV who are very involved with this.
OHAV being your synagogue.
And the Les Garden Foundation, and, you know, there have been some forward movement in research, and
yes, there has
been significant changes.
Yeah, a lot.
It's still moving. Cancer research in general is something that there's just a huge amount of change happening, and you know, scientifically, it's an exciting area with real implications. So it's a good area. So
Last night on 60 Minutes, there was a segment about gene therapy and sickle cell that they really can. They really think that they can find a cure for it now.
See, now, I can't do that. You went from, like, a death sentence, which I see it, to a message of hope. I cannot do that. I am totally distressed at this.
And thus lies
lovely,
the difference.
Moral... Yeah!
Nice, Libby.
Yeah, I have to have hope, because otherwise, given what we're facing in this country, if we don't have hope, they win.
Yeah, we're losing a great voice and a moral force.
Well, he's
awesome.
Going to keep working, though.
Right.
This is the point.
Yeah. Well, he's and got stage there four are other cancer.
Not that any voice will replace him, but there are other great voices. There are other people working towards the same thing. He has the history and the moral imperative, and he's on the right side of God, as far as I'm concerned. You know, but we have to have hope.
Did you see, speaking of gene editing, these Chinese have convicted three researchers involved in gene-edited babies? Three researchers involved in the births of genetically edited babies have been convicted, sentenced by a Chinese court for practicing medicine illegally. Researcher He Jiankui announcement 13 months ago that he had helped make the world's first genetically edited babies sparked a global debate over the ethics of this. And he got a 3-year term. Two other people received lesser sentences. Apparently, what he did was he recruited men who had HIV and women who did not. And there was forgery involved with the disclosure forms. Mm-hmm. But his goal was to make use editing to prevent HIV infections in newborns.
Right. Oh, wow. Right. Good intentions gone way awry.
Yeah, because gene editing can end up being, straight, white, blue-eyed, blonde-haired children.
Well, I mean, and also there's just all these other things. You know, what I find encouraging is the bioethics community is very works very closely with the biologists. Somehow over the past 50 years, these groups have grown together, and instead of hating each other the way you see in some places where science and ethics are coming into clashes, for example, in artificial intelligence, what you're seeing is there a community that roundly believes that certain things should be regulated, should be done very carefully. This gene editing is an example. So the whole world came out against this guy, and it was really very encouraging to see that you didn't have a few people just saying, oh, good, great, wonderful. I mean, you had, you know, a crazy fringe.
Do you think he miscalculated? He announced this all himself. He was at a medical conference when he boasted, I guess. He miscalculated.
I think he miscalculated.
You mean he miscalculated that he was going to get thrown in jail?
That they would look at the technology and the, you know, the brilliance of the the medical work rather than the ethics of it.
Well, and if you think about it, you know, his claim was he was doing something good. Let's forget the forgery issues and things like that. I mean, there's a lot of issues here that he may not really have done it right. But the risks you're taking, things like that, it's got to be very carefully controlled. You know, when we bring a new drug out and say, you know, here's a drug that could, the Ebola vaccine, right, had to get rushed into production because you had an outbreak going on.
The crisis in West Africa.
But you still had a lot of care put into it. You had a lot of people tracking what was going on, things like that. So, again, I think gene editing is something that's going to be very hard not to see some of that happen.
In fact, you'll have a black market.
Maybe. But, you know, I think that would be hard to form given the current world.
Given the state of Chinese government, though, and the dictatorship that exists, were they unaware of this? Were they unaware of this research being done?
No, that's why I was asking the questions about whether he miscalculated. I think it's very possible the government did also, seeing this as it would have been a boost to, if it had been accepted, prestige. It would have been a boost to the ingenuity and the enterprise of China. Instead, they see it as, oh my God, this is gonna hurt our research and development profile.
The Chinese researchers condemned this quite
they
highly,
did.
As
yeah.
did the government. I mean, so I don't think that this was the case of the government doing something on one hand. And there was pretty clear evidence this wasn't done in a very transparent way.
And, Jim, are you sure? Are you sure that the researchers at the universities don't take their orders from the government?
You know, we could have a long conversation about this since I have a lot of friends who are Chinese researchers. But the answer is the government has some. In our country, too. I mean, I get a lot of my funding from the government. And if I want to do research one way and not another way, then I have to argue for it. But it goes
through
a
scientific. Do you have a form that allows you to be on the show?
Let's just say my security clearance guys might object to some of the things I say on the show. But luckily, I live in America where we at least in theory have those liberties. But
for the moment.
Well said,
but, but the Chinese researchers, like the American researchers, have a lot of stuff in the research culture and the way the science is done, in the controls and things like that. Now, what's happening in government labs, just as might be happening in some of the U.S. defense labs, that's a lot harder to say. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, this doesn't seem to at least be the technology that's
so
happening.
If you have a parent who's afraid of CP for any one of 1,000 legitimate reasons or even not, and who has an ability to say, I don't want my kid to have this thing, should it be there should not be a way of dealing with that?
Well, so again, this is where those ethics issues come in, and it will be done. It needs to be done in a very controlled and careful way. Right now, the risk is still higher than the benefit. Yeah. We have no clue what would
happen. Okay, could you just give us what the risks are in this case?
Sure. So, for example, in a lot of these gene-edited cases, when it's been done in animals, the offspring have not lived or have developed other diseases.
Dolly, or a second or third generation
effect comes in. So we need to truly understand those things before we should even be considering.
I mean, all the cancer research that you just mentioned, which is changing in very exciting ways, that involves very similar techniques of editing genes or going into the gene level of biology to fix. So the ethical dilemma here is playing God versus being able to fix very real problems that we now.
When you say playing God, That's an interesting term, Rosemary, but playing God in science could be confused. Could it not?
I mean, of course. Again, as Jim said, that's where the ethics comes in. Libby pointed out that with genetic engineering, you could have only boys, only sons, which many cultures have tried.
Which I'm surprised that China, because it's a one child.
Well, they changed that, actually.
Yeah, that changed.
Let's take a break. I think we can all agree that Morgan Freeman should play God, though, right?
Oh, yeah. No question.
Let's take a break here. It's the Roundtable Panel. Libby Post, Jim Hendler, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's a Monday morning. 10:05 is the time, and everybody's talking. We'll just wait for a second here, everybody, and then I'll establish the show, and then you can talk. Libby Post is here. Jim Hendler, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok are here. That's the panel. Now you guys can talk. Go ahead.
We have nothing to say.
No one wants to talk. Well, you know what?
You need to throw something out. Discuss. Need to go blah, 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 blah. Discuss.
Give me the letters. We have an email address here. It's panel@wamc.org. Discuss.
You want us to discuss?
No, I want Alan to read some letters.
Oh, okay. William says, common sense gun law. Hello, panel.
Hello.
In 2017, 24 people were mowed down in a church shooting in Sutherland Spring, Texas. Right. Last year, Texas passed a law that allows church parishioners to arm themselves. Yesterday, in another church shooting, this law worked exactly as it was intended, a common-sense gun law that actually saved lives. William, over to you, Rosemary.
Well, I mean, it did work in this case. It could just as easily have been that parishioners and the shooters shot at each other, and you had more people killed in a crossfire. Mm-hmm. It was a lucky shot,
shot. Those guys were trained shooters. That's not a lucky shot.
It was a lucky outcome, and I would maintain that. And also, the other thing is that in a year, that was their fix. They went for a fast fix. We just arm everybody. And the problem of why that guy was in there with a gun, why churches and synagogues have become dangerous places. I mean, I considered whether I should really take my mother to midnight mass this year because there would be so many people there. That has not been touched. Now there's more armed people, not less. And to call that a success is just extremely short-sighted, I think.
The way that I see it is you're right and you're wrong. You're right in that the long-term solution is obviously to put more Holocaust units out there, to let more people understand what's at stake, to educate young people. But in the short run, there are an awful lot of people in that room who got saved because of the guns.
On the other hand, you got to take the whole situation, right? This guy was wearing a wig. The guy was dressed weird. People all over the church were nervous about the guy.
And they knew the minute he came in.
The security guards were watching the person, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very different situation than somebody who joins a prayer group, picks up a gun, and shoots 12 people.
Well, what's your point? I mean, should they not have been watching the guy?
What I'm saying is, again, it's this all or nothing thinking, right? Trained people knowing what they're doing seem to work okay in this case, but it could also have been very tragic if it had been somebody who looked normal, mm-hmm. had managed to pull out, one of these semi-automatics and done some serious
damage. If you're going to have a security force at a church, do they have to be armed and in the church like sky marshals? Why not set them up outside so that you're walking through, and then the guy with the wig would have been, when it caught there, Dylan Roof would have been caught, a white, young white guy going into an all-black church. These people would have been targeted
metal
ahead
detectors
of time. Metal detectors would have helped.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want metal detectors.
I know.
You know, I don't want them.
Well, I lived in Israel for a year where you're checked as you go into a supermarket. You go through metal detectors all the time. In some ways, it's significantly safer. They still have a significant terrorism issue there, but compared to what it would be. But there, they don't arm the individuals. There are a lot of armed individuals, but that's because they've been in the Army. They've had the training.
Because
they have
they're
some
in
of
the Army.
Strictest, they have some of the strictest gun laws in the world, you know, it's very interesting. You go to a beach in Israel and you see a bunch of late teenagers, early 20s, in their bathing suits running out into the water, and one person AK-47. Sitting there who has to stay because the guns cannot be unprotected. That person is typically in uniform, is keeping track of things. You know, there's this significant amount of training.
For a good reason, by the way. I remember distinctly a couple of years ago, maybe it was several years ago, some frogmen from the other side walked up on the beaches in Tel Aviv did their thing.
You know, I was there when buses were blowing up. But when you compare the question is, do you want to live in a police state? Do you want to live somewhere where anything goes? You know, you're always going to be trading off these things.
But, Jim, doesn't it depend on the
thing is very complicated.
It is complicated. Doesn't it depend on the exigencies of the situation?
Yeah.
There are some places you would have to do it.
I would just like to say that I hope Israel is not our model of where
exactly.
we want to go. It is a police state, and it is the problem there is caused because of 50 years that we haven't confronted the real problem of occupying Palestine.
Well,
and there are different ways to deal with it.
Right. I won't get into that political issue.
Right.
Because,
well,
I don't know that I like,
you know, I mean, okay, leave it alone. But I do think Rosemary makes a point about too bad that this has to happen. You have to be armed that way. I don't want to take it beyond that because I think there are two sides to this story.
But think about how, I mean, on one hand, air safety has gotten very good in terms of that. On the other hand, we all go through this insane thing to get on an airplane. Imagine you had to do that same thing to get into a grocery store.
And you're the data guy. The evidence is that it's locking the cockpits is what saved people, not making people take off their shoes and lift their arms up over their head.
And that's the point about having some kind of solutions that make sense.
Correct.
And also the problem is you're never going to get 100%. You know, it's never going to be the case that nobody kills anyone in a society.
Yeah.
The thing you have to do is come up with rational rules that will protect the maximum people. Mm-hmm. Getting rid of major, you know, getting rid of the semi-automatics is
just
a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom says it's not the mentally ill. Panel, the problem is not the mentally ill people taking up arms. The problem is that many mentally ill people are more easily manipulated by people like Donald Trump, who plant the seeds of hate. And that's from from Tom. And where? Oaxaca, Mexico.
Wow.
Oh, neat.
That's very nice.
Thanks for listening.
Gracias.
And Bob says, while hate crimes, while America has been seeing a rise in hate crimes for a decade, I don't recall earlier examples of black-on-Jewish attacks. I'm wondering if the upstate black city official who linked these attacks to aggressive efforts by the ultra-Orthodox to buy black homes may not be too far off base. And that's Bob from Albany.
They're not looking to... They're going through places in Rockland County and now a little bit in Orange County not to buy homes specifically of black people. That's a false equivalency.
Yeah.
They're looking to just buy real estate and expand where they can live. That's a whole other conversation to have, whether it's good or not, but it has nothing to do with buying homes of black people. And in the 60s, you know, it was Jewish kids who were killed down south registering voters, the kids from Cornell.
Yeah.
And there was a great deal of shared brotherhood and sisterhood between the Jewish community and the black community. I think people like Louis Farrakhan have polarized the situation, blaming Jews for everything that's wrong with the economically disadvantaged in this country. And that has really sowed some seeds of anti-Semitism within the black community. But let's be real here. It was the Republican Party in Rockland County who did the ad and did a TV spot that targeted the Hasidic community as the other in Rockland County.
And if you look at the attacks that were going down in the city and elsewhere, it wasn't all black people attacking white guys or Jews. It was all sorts of different people. I mean, you know, again, it's a hatred thing. It's the other thing. And, you know, I wish there was a magic solution.
Right.
But I think we have to, as a society, start to really change the way we do this, and having someone in the White House who lives off of this is not helpful.
Jonathan writes, panel, I hope you will please remember that the term is mentally ill encompasses a great variety of people with all types of illnesses and diagnoses. Please remember that the mentally ill are far more likely to be the victims of violence, bigotry, fraud, and discrimination than the general public. Whenever a horrific incident such as occurred in Muncie occurs, the stigma of mental illness becomes more horrible. And I would say I want to remind everybody, based on what I'm reading now, Ray's injunction, to make sure that you read your letters and edit them before you send them, because otherwise it will take a certain amount of translation on the part of the reader, who then turns around to look like an idiot.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah.
And we don't want that.
No. Yeah. When we can help it.
Funny. Jerry says, morning discussion. Maybe I lack some basic understanding of the issues, but I do understand how Trump has managed to rally the support of the people who target Jewish people, along with the same folks who rally behind a strong Israel state. The two goals are seemingly contradictory. And that's Jerry from Carver, Massachusetts.
It gets complicated, but it's actually not as contradictory as you'd think, because this pro-Israel group that comes out of the evangelical movement is not a pro-Jewish group. It's actually a group that's looking at end times.
That's
and the
right.
fact that once they convert all us Jews
It's the Dominionists.
Christians in Jerusalem, then you'll have the return and all that stuff. So, you know, I find it strange when you see these strange bedfellows and what the reasons are. And, you know, a lot of people who – anybody – you know, when you start focusing on a single issue, I care only about Israel. I care only about guns. I care only about this. You get these polarizations and, you know, the world's a complicated place. Mm-hmm. I feel like I don't get enough letters here because I always talk about the gray area instead of the black.
You're far
or the
too
white.
Reasonable. Cut out. Stop.
But that's what I'm that's what I was trained as a scientist is to look for, you know, what works. And the problem is we're not a society that's set up for coming up with working solutions. We're a society that's getting worse and worse.
And we want to blame. We're a society that just wants to blame.
Our friend Jules has written us a letter. Dear panel, the NRA has won this round. We will devolve into armed Wild West until hopefully, perhaps in a couple of generations, after many tragic deaths, the population comes to its senses and rejects the gun culture, hoping for a better year in 2020, and that's from our friend Jules.
Well, and you know, one of the possible solutions is something that moves a lot more of this down to local regulations and to places that clearly urban areas should, you know, need different controls than rural areas. What drives me crazy is this all keeps going up to the Supreme Court and you keep getting these one size fits all solutions for a very large, complicated country like ours. So again, another example of where you know, what will work in New York City is not clearly the right thing to be doing in rural Texas.
Right. And for the last letter I have in front of me right now, it comes from Chris, who says, armed in church. Now, I read this in advance. I just don't know. Libby, I'm going to count on you on this one. The Jewish faith in particular has always carried weapons to worship since the inception of Judaism. That's what I thought.
No, in fact, they're prohibited on most occasions. We're not allowed to carry. We're not supposed to carry on Shabbat.
That's true.
Even within an era, if I don't think we could carry guns. But nonetheless.
Well, you couldn't use a gun.
Yeah, we can't. We can't use them. That's except true. So why bother carrying?
Okay, I'm not reading the rest of the letter since Libby has given us the definitive answer, which is no.
Yeah, no.
Special circumstances.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that's great.
So, in fact, getting back to the Israel thing, right? The rabbis actually spent a very long time coming up with rationales to allow Israeli soldiers to be armed on our holidays and on Shabbat. And,
You know, what's the most important thing is protection.
Protection of life
That's right. Protection of life, of a life that's actually on the planet, is what's the most important thing.
Right. That's right.
Let's be real. Let's be,
let's be
consistent about
specific.
That.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org. If you would like to join us with a brief message, panel@wamc.org. An Iranian-based militia says the death toll from U.S. military strikes in Iraq and Syria against its fighters has risen to 25. The militia is vowing to exact revenge for, quote, the aggression of evil American ravens. Today's announcement in Baghdad came a day after U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper said U.S. military strikes targeted the Iranian-backed Iraqi militia that was blamed for a rocket attack last week that killed an American contractor. Initially, 19 members of the Hezbollah brigades were reported killed. That number now 25. Iran In fact, we're seeing it on the TV news, is suggesting revenge is in the offing. Anybody?
Well, if you listen to NPR this morning, they were quite clear that Mr. Pompeo, Secretary of State, was saying that there had been a series of provocative actions on the part of the Iranians using their people in Iraq to do this stuff. Now, I don't know. I'm not there. I don't have the slightest idea. I do know that Donald Trump is one of the greatest liars that this country has ever produced. And I am assuming that the people around him can't be trusted that much either. But I just don't know the truth.
Well, there were allegedly three locations in Iraq that we struck, two in Syria. And the New York Times pointing out this is significant in that it's really direct strikes on Iranian proxies. So stepping up the escalating the tensions a little bit.
You know, I hate the idea of escalating the tensions. I wish we could have peace everywhere. However, I also think that the real politic on this one has been Trump has been letting Syria and Iran in particular, the two of them, get away with a lot of stuff. The you know, there have been people who've been arguing for a massive thing to happen, which I'm very much against. But there have been...
What do you mean a massive thing?
Some kind of massive response, you know, really sending in troops, doing something. But if you look at our foreign policy for a long time, the problem is you do need occasionally to do something. You know, again, it's the police force idea, right? If you let, you know, sooner or later you have to respond to criminal activity. But you do it appropriately and you do it in a measured way. This one actually surprised me because as Alan says, it's hard to know the details. But if the details are what they said, this is this administration doing something relatively measured and possibly appropriate. It's a very unusual
thing. I take it from everything about this makes me distrust our administration. I don't believe it. Trump is spoiling for a fight with Iran. Mm-hmm. He pulled out of the nuclear agreement. He has put intense pressure on Iran with economic sanctions, and they are poking back, trying to save themselves. And first, it was like, okay, they abandoned all of the restrictions on their nuclear development. And now there's increasing violence. What has been throughout that region a proxy war is now becoming a direct war. This is the first time I think that American troops have been directly involved since they shot in Yemen, which was another of the proxy fights going on between Saudi Arabia, our ally, a Trump ally, and Iran. And this is dangerous. It's destabilizing. It's no way is any reaction involving American troops a good thing in the Middle East.
So you would discount the fact that since at least the Carter administration, presidents have pretty much said Iran is a bad actor in many ways.
And we have five or 6,000
Iran is a bad
actor,
but the way to deal with it is to have these little American troops are now fighting Iran. Is that really a good idea? Right. And I cannot conceive of a situation where it would be a good thing. Yes, they're provoking. They're doing it on purpose. And it's easy because of where American troops are and because of Trump's stance.
Right. And because he's easy to provoke. It's so easy to get him to make a reaction.
I hate to say something positive about Trump, but I will
then
tell
don't,
you
please.
That.
Please.
But I will tell you that when you had the Iranian ship incidents, when you had some of the other attack incidents, you know, we had planes ready to go in the air and he called it off, which stunned me. I was surprised that you showed that response. It was unclear to me who convinced him it was a bad idea, but someone realized that. So again, you know, we've had I don't know what to do about it. It's another of these horrible situations. But, you know, I've been an advisor to the Department of Defense for many years. I think, again, it gets into this whole thing of you have to be very careful. You have to look at these things and treat it as a whole situation. I don't know if this one was appropriate or not.
I can't see where our
rights,
where are U.S. rights or lives in danger? There was one subcontractor on this base who was an American, and that was the excuse used. Trump is looking. Trump and Pompeo continue to look for excuses saying our interests are endangered. We have to act to get this sort of response. Oh, it's right that we did it. We are putting ourselves in a place and provoking reaction from Iran.
So, Rosemary, do you think that Trump wants a real, all
yes.
that war.
Yes, I do. I think he's spoiling for a
I'm
fight.
I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure. I think he loves to poke at them, and he loves to push them. But I think he knows that his presidency would be in grave danger if he enters into an all-out war.
I think our policies in both North Korea and in the Middle East vis-a-vis Iran are incredibly dangerous.
They are.
And not in America's interest.
They
costly.
Are. Okay, let's take the North Korean situation for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say their dictator is totally crazy. And decides to fire...
As is ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. No, I'm just asking a question. And decides to fire a missile at Southern California. Would that ever happen? Do you think that can happen in this
I was
situation?
Afraid it was going to happen at Christmas.
No, but do you think it can happen now? In other words, you know, I've always thought with China sitting next door to North Korea, they've got to be very careful about anything that they do that is totally outrageous. To fire a missile into the Japanese sea is one thing, and we'll take that. We won't like that. But to actually do harm to an American city or to American possession, I don't get it.
Look at how North Korea serves China's purpose. The U.S. extends all this effort and rhetoric on North Korea and its threat. Meantime, China is building up fortresses in the South China Sea.
Correct.
It's building. It's going into the Arctic.
No question.
And we are just sitting there saying, oh yeah, we're in danger from North Korea. No, we're really not. We're in danger from China.
Rosemary. Yeah. You know, again, the problem I run into with all of this is it's easy to say what the problems are. It's really hard to say what to do about it. So take the whole thing with the Turkey and the Syrian withdrawal,
Correct.
Things like that. Again, we were on this radio station, and here was the U.S. withdrawing troops, and you among others were saying, you know, but look what it does to our Kurdish allies. And I agreed with that, right? The problem is there was a case where we pulled troops out, right? It's really tough, but we got to balance stuff.
There's your real problem, is that there is no evidence, none, from Pompeo's State House that there is a cohesive policy where we know. In this case, we should withdraw. In this case, we should not. Here's what we're doing overall. You can't even tell me what our overall goals are in the Middle East or with North Korea and China. And there's the problem. So when we have individual cases, you're always going to be able to say, yeah, they had to do it in this case. No. No, I think doing nothing is always better than taking precipitous steps that are going to lead to violence. And I fear that's what we're doing now.
Not always. Right. I mean, fighting Hitler was probably, we had to take a precipitous step, right?
Come on, that was not precipitous at all. How long did FDR work?
There are
work?
Times
Build
when
it,
force
come on.
Is necessary.
World War II is not at all comparable to what we're dealing with now.
Well, you said always.
And I do say always. World War II was not precipitous. FDR spent years building up American industrial power, working with our allies. That was hardly what's happening in Iran. Not at all a comparison.
Japan? In World War II?
After we got attacked, yeah.
That's when we went in. It took that.
Reading a little further, Ross has written guns. Rosemary is absolutely right. No guns and no one dies. To be satisfied with two fatalities is absurd for any society. Europe and recently New Zealand got it right. The government took a leadership position and rid themselves of people killing firearms. Well, I'm still going back to that church. I'm still going back to what happened. And while I hate guns and I think that we have become a gun culture and it's crazy, 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 I do think we have to do something in the short term, not allowing a madman or somebody like that to walk into a church or a synagogue. I just think that. Panel says Larry, of course, it's a good thing there were armed guards to neutralize the shooter at the church. The issue, though, is that we live in a country that necessitates armed guards in the first place. We should join other civilized countries that have strict controls on the availability and use of guns. I certainly agree with that.
That's right. Certainly, if that guy hadn't had a gun when he walked into the church, all of this changes, right? I mean, we needed
well,
the
machete stuff's pretty terrifying as well.
Yeah, although again, you know, the amount of damage done
is
compared
limited,
to what was
right.
done by somebody who comes in with a semi-automatic or even, you know, in this case, it wasn't clear what kind of gun, but it didn't sound like it was a major gun.
All right, Alan, is that a short letter? We only
it
have about
is.
15
Very
seconds.
Very quickly, Amy, Rosemary is correct. Thank you, Rosemary. We had better not base our security on Israel. The Israel-Palestine issue has not by any means been addressed. Amy from Beckett.
All right. And the email address here is panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. We do have more time for some letters coming up after the news. A great panel today. Political consultant at lobbyist Libby Post is here. Professor Jim Hendler is here. Investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo and WAMC's Alan Shartok. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable. It's a Monday morning, 10:34 is the time. Roundtable panel in session today. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, Jim Hendler, Libby Post, and of course you at panel@wamc.org. 40 million Californians will soon obtain sweeping digital privacy rights, stronger than any seen before in the U.S., posing a significant challenge to big tech and the data economy it helped create. California residents will be able to see what personal information companies have collected on them and request it be deleted, though they have limited legal resources if they face obstacles there. The law is by far the strongest in the nation. Jim Hendler, I'm going to throw it to you first.
Oh, gosh. So I think this is great. In Europe, you have something called the General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR, right? And what it did is it basically said people have the right to know what information is being collected about them, who has it, how it's being shared, and to ask that it be removed in certain cases, right? Because the amount of information that businesses share about us, the things that go on your web browser, your phone,
sure.
things like that are just incredible, the amount of what's followed, what's known, and especially as you add some of these powerful new technologies. Problem is, it's almost impossible for you as an individual to do anything. Go live in the cabin, you know, in a rural thing with no electricity, and they'll only know a little bit about you as long as nobody ever talks to you. But you know, and for years we've been worried about the government doing this, and it passed lots of rules about what the government legally can and can't do. That's enshrined in the Constitution. Companies have been given the right to do whatever the heck they wanted. And, you know, we've seen the abuses. We saw this with Facebook and Cambridge Analytica. Mm-hmm. We can argue what impact, Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, have had on our politics. But a lot of, I think, the stuff we're talking about today, the polarizations and things like that, have been increased by some of that stuff. And that gets increased by companies that really don't care about anything but their bottom line. And one of the ways to solve this is what are called privacy-enhancing technologies. But the problem is it's very hard for, even when these things come out, it's hard for us as individuals to manage them. So if you needed to know every piece of information that's being traded about you with everything, so when you go to, you know, a website and buy something, who are they telling that you bought it? Who are they sharing that information with? I have a picture in a paper I wrote where it just shows when you go to a website, there's a tool which will show you everything they ask for and everything they ask for. So you go to one news site, you go to New York Times, right? And then you click on a follow-up story, you're up to about 50 different organizations which are now have looked at your information, have bid on it, things like that. So what California is doing is saying, look, we don't know exactly what to do about this. They, you know, so a lot of the criticism of the GDPR by the technology community was the rules are really hard to understand and follow.
Yeah.
Right? And the Europeans actually said, you know what, we're going to put them in place and then we'll fix things as they go along. And what it caused is a lot of companies, both in the U.S. and Europe, to start paying attention to these things. You have so many more websites you go to now say, you know, we're tracking cookies, you know, do you accept this or not?
Yeah.
Right?
Which everyone says yes, so they go ahead.
But if you go to a European site or a site that's GDPR, if you say no, you still get to see the information. If you go to a U.S. one and you say no, it says, okay, goodbye, you can't look at us.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, so. I'm fascinated with what Ray just said and what you've been saying, Jim, and that is a lot depends on what people care about. I mean, I don't know that most people care that they're doing this to them. You know, there may be the people who listen to WAMC or a group of those people, but I think you got change in California because a big enough population cared about it. I don't see it happening where people are rising up and saying, stop
well,
figuring
I
out
I can tell you some of the problems with GDPR, which is a stricter, slightly different version than California. We used it, of course, when I was working overseas. One is that it's used by despots and government to stop journalists. Journalism is done by corporations that are aimed at it. So if you begin collecting information from the public record, the government's tried to shut it down. There have been several cases where this has been brought up. The EU has been determined, they say, to protect journalists, but there's still several cases because, as you say, Jim, they're working it out as the problem arises. And the second one is that, as with everything else, individuals with privilege, access, and money use this to shut down historical records. So big guys who have criminal records are able to expunge that information. So while I totally understand and appreciate this on privacy, there have to be exceptions for journalism and for I think some NGOs who use this information in a good way.
So Rosemary, I'm sorry about that. What creates the difference between the way America's handling this and the way the Europeans have handled it?
Well, Americans have a whole different view of privacy than the Europeans, I think, from World War II, perhaps. And their view is that privacy trumps everything. In America, the view is that public interest trumps everything. So if it's in to know about a past record, to know about how the Afghanistan papers and the Pentagon papers, all of those were, we have a right to know what our government is doing. In Europe, it's reversed. It's no. The individual has the right to protect almost anything about themselves that they want to.
So the real thing is you're back to government control of information.
Right, right. It's
right?
True.
But that's very different than business, right? The fact that Google can know all that stuff and use it in any way it wants is very different.
But including right? Google and the New York Times are both companies.
But that's why we need things like CCPD and GDPR to let people have some control over that stuff to at least create some kind of economy or some kind of rule. So again, I don't think the right solution is just my clicking every time I go to a website, yes or no, or what happens. I think it's companies, for example. So the reason those companies want all our information is it gives them the ability to make a lot of money.
Yeah, to market us.
Right, and to market us mm-hmm. without us getting any of it back.
Mm-hmm.
But also things, you know, people are very stunned when I tell them things like, if everybody in this room or everybody who's listening to us went to the same website and asked to buy the same thing, we'd see different prices.
Information back.
Right. Different prices.
Wow.
Right? So you go to any good Stiples, Target, any of those, different people looking at exactly the same product will see different prices because it's using information to guess how likely you are to buy that thing. And if it thinks I'm more likely to buy it than Libby, it'll charge me a higher price than it'll charge her. Things like that.
Okay, I hate that.
If you live close to the store, you'll get a different thing than if you live far away. If you go back to buy airplane tickets, the second time you go back, you're likely
to pay higher.
I
notice that all the time.
Because it's not because more seats have sold. It's because the fact that you came back the second time. In fact, I always use someone else.
I do too. I use my mother's computer, right?
Things like that. You do the research on one side and you order. Well, okay, that's all because of this information aggregation.
Wow.
What California is doing is saying, you should know that's going on.
Okay, so I got a question for you guys. So California obviously came up with all kinds of rules for its automobiles and automobile emissions, right? Mm-hmm. And we knew that as soon as they did that, the manufacturers of these cars were going to have to make this universal because they couldn't just make a separate fleet of cars for California.
Yeah.
How does that affect what we're talking about now? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, so I think it's really important that it's California. So with the exception of two or three large companies, Amazon, Microsoft, et cetera, almost all of the high-tech companies that are doing the main information manipulation are located in Silicon Valley or have a headquarters in Silicon Valley or other. So having to build something that works in California will be very hard not to do something. In fact, it's the same thing with GDPR. I see things now when I go to what if you go to the Guardian site, right? Yeah. They're not going to say you can see this in America and this in Europe.
Right.
I work very closely with IBM on a number of products and projects. Right. We have to be very careful now. So, for example, for some of the things we're doing where we're doing, you know, traditional psych experiments where you get what's called an institutional, you get permission to say this won't hurt anybody, things like that. We actually have to put in a clause now that says, by the way, none of our students will actually take this technology to Europe. Any of our students who are European only can use this while they're enrolled in a U.S. institution. So there are some rules in GDPR that allow that. And again, so IBM now puts a lot of money and thought into their privacy rules, because having to sell the same product in two different places, if you can't differentiate, is very hard. So it's actually helping us all in privacy. And I think doing it in California is a wonderful place to do it, because really hard for a company like Google to say, well, okay, we'll be careful in California, but nowhere else.
Isn't that the same thing they did with the car industry and emission standards?
Yeah, exactly.
Basically,
and
California
that's
said...
But in this case,
I think it's even more important because California is such a seat of power of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, again, what a lot of these articles that just came out said is, you know, this stuff's not working quite right and there's a lot of questions and most Americans don't understand it yet, and the answer is right.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have 2 minutes here.
I'll give you your 2 minutes worth of letters.
All right,
okay?
Go ahead.
Here we go. Dear panel, when Trump decided not to attack Iran because it was obvious Trump and his cronies were fabricating a threat from Iran, and he backed off because it would be easy to prove one of his many lies, Trump shouldn't be given any statements he can do any good.
This comes back to proofreading.
Yes, it does. And Patrick, long-time listener, first-time writer, I really like the show. However, returning Trump for all our nation's blaming Trump for all our nation's problems and violence is wrong. I'm not a Trump supporter, but it's a huge turn off when the leftist media attacks him all the time. Younger voters like me see through all that political bias. Remember that comes election time. And then we heard from Ed, who said, "Dear panel, in this country and around the world, it is the weak and disenfranchised who lash out irrationally and resort to the kind of violence being discussed on the panel today. Are these people ignorant? Of course they are. But to understand and actually do something about what is really going on, we have to understand their pain."
Good point.
Wait. Good point? Are you sure?
Good point that we have to understand their pain, not good point that it's only them.
That their pain justifies what they're doing? No. Anyway... Lynn says, "Alan, Rosemary's on target with Trump. He wants to be a war president." And Tristan says, "Trump's restraint with Iran, Putin is the one forcing Trump to restrain his response to Iran. Trump will only retaliate within the limits set by the man bankrolling his business ventures and supporting his reelection. Wishing you all a healthy, happy, and prosperous new year." Tristan in Grafton, New York.
Yeah, tomorrow's the last roundtable panel for the new year, and barring any
for the old year,
right? And barring any huge calamitous events overnight, we'll do a retrospective of some of the big stories.
How about our predictions?
Oh, you want to do the predictions?
Well, I have predictions.
Yes, I know. I read your predictions, and I found them odious as usual, sir. But we can always recount.
Trump will be defeated.
Oh, is that really one that you have?
Yes,
I didn't
indeed.
See that one.
Yes, me too.
I didn't. Where did you put? Did you publish that one?
No, it's coming out.
Oh, that's new. All right, save it for the show. Thank you all for being here. Libby Post, Jimmy Hendler, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, thank you all for listening. This is the Roundtable. Now, there's a lot more ahead. I encourage you to stay by your radio, and we will have more good stuff for you coming up.